Hey everyone, and welcome back. We're diving deep today into a story you might think you know. Jesus walking on water. But we're going to go deeper than just, you know, the surface. Thanks to insights from a lecture by biblical scholar Dr. Mark Jennings. Get ready for some aha moments, even if you've heard this story a million times.
Yeah, it's so easy to just kind of skim over those familiar stories. But Dr. Jennings, he really unpacks the context in a fascinating way. He starts right before the walking on water incident with the feeding of the 5,000. And a detail that he emphasizes is that only the disciples actually witnessed that miracle.
That's interesting. Why would that matter so much in this story?
Well, because it highlights how many miracles they'd already seen at this point. You know, these weren't like guys easily impressed by magic tricks. They'd witnessed Jesus healing, casting out demons, the works. So their reaction later on, or lack of reaction even, becomes even more significant.
So they should have been kind of used to Jesus like bending reality a little bit. I'm getting the sense this is setting us up for something.
Exactly. And Dr. Jennings, he cleverly points out the parallels between this miracle and the calming of the storm. Which we've talked about before, you know, wind plays a huge role in both. There's a sudden calm. And then this revelation of Jesus's divine nature. It's like the gospel writer, Mark, is building tension and giving us clues about what's really important here.
Okay, so picture it. The disciples are out on the lake, battling the wind, you know, middle of the night. And suddenly they see this figure walking towards them on the water.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to imagine a more awe-inspiring and probably terrifying sight. And this is where Dr. Jennings brings in the Old Testament. See, walking on water is directly linked to God's power.
Okay.
Think of it this way. Moses, he parted the Red Sea, the water moved, right? But Jesus isn't changing the water. He's transcending natural laws.
He's not just parting the ways. He's walking on them. It's a whole other level. Mm. But the disciples, they don't exactly jump for joy, do they?
No, their first reaction is pure terror. They think he's a ghost. And it's a fascinating insight into human nature, I think. Even seeing the divine, it doesn't mean you have an instant understanding. Jesus reassures them, saying, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Now, this is where the language gets interesting. Dr. Jennings suggests a connection between "it is I" and the divine name, "I am," from Exodus.
Oh, right.
Remember when God reveals his name to Moses?
I am. W-H-O-I-M.
Exactly.
So are you saying there's a link between how Jesus identifies himself here and God's self-revelation to Moses?
It's definitely worth pondering. And what's even more striking is what happens next. The disciples are described as completely amazed. Now, we usually see crowds amazed, not those closest to Jesus.
That does seem odd, yeah. You'd think they'd be past the amazed phase by now.
Exactly. And Dr. Jennings connects this amazement back to their lack of understanding about the feeding of the 5,000. Remember, they saw that miracle, yet Mark says their hearts were hardened. That language echoes how the Pharisees who opposed Jesus are described.
Hold on. Are you saying the disciples are more like the Pharisees than we might think? That's a pretty bold claim.
It's definitely provocative, and it raises a question about what true faith really means. Is it about witnessing miracles, or is there a deeper level of understanding that the disciples at this point seem to be missing?
So we get this tension building. The disciples are struggling to grasp the true meaning of what they're seeing. And now Dr. Jennings shifts gears to a confrontation between Jesus and the Pharisees. Where does that fit into all of this?
Well, this confrontation, it revolves around the concept of oral tradition, which was basically like a set of Jewish teachings passed down alongside the written law. The Pharisees, they were all about these traditions, and they criticized Jesus's disciples for not washing their hands before eating, a practice rooted in this oral tradition.
Ah, so this is where that whole hand washing debate comes in.
Yeah.
But why is Dr. Jennings spending so much time on this? What's the bigger point?
I think he's setting up a contrast between Jesus's focus on the spirit of the law versus the Pharisees' rigid adherence to rules and rituals. It's like he's saying, you can follow all the rules, but are you really getting the point?
Okay, so we've got miracles, confused disciples, and now a showdown with the Pharisees brewing. Things are getting interesting. Let's dig into that clash in part two.
This is where things get, like, really heated. Instead of defending his disciples about the hand washing thing, Jesus goes straight for the heart of the matter. He quotes Isaiah, calling the Pharisees hypocrites. You know, those who honor God with their lips, but their hearts are far from him. Out.
It sounds like a direct attack. So he's not just disagreeing with their interpretation of the law. He's like questioning their entire approach to faith.
Absolutely. He accuses them of, prioritizing tradition over God's true commands, reducing faith to a set of man-made rules. And here's where Dr. Jennings really dives deep. You see, Jesus doesn't just leave it at a general accusation. He gives a very specific example of this hypocrisy. It's called the Corbin rule.
Corbin. That sounds familiar, but I can't quite place it. What was that all about?
It was this practice where a son could declare his possessions Corbin, meaning like dedicated to God, and then use that as an excuse to avoid supporting his aging parents. Essentially, they were using religion to get out of their family obligations.
So they're using this like religious loophole to sidestep taking care of their family. That seems like a pretty blatant contradiction of the commandment to, honor your father and mother.
Exactly. And the Pharisees, who are supposed to be the guardians of the law, are actually supporting this practice. You know, they're putting tradition above one of the most fundamental moral laws.
That's where it gets tricky, isn't it? Because tradition is important. It provides structure and a sense of continuity. But Jesus seems to be saying they've become so fixated on the letter of the law that they've lost sight of the spirit of it.
Right. It's a tension that exists in every religion, I think. How do we balance tradition with the ever-evolving understanding of our faith? And this tension, it leads to one of the most profound teachings in this whole section. Jesus says it's not what goes into a person that makes them unclean, but what comes out of their heart.
So he's flipping the whole purity debate on its head. The Pharisees are obsessed with external purity, washing hands, following dietary rules. But Jesus is saying true uncleanliness comes from within. Evil thoughts, greed, deceit, all those internal things.
It's a radical shift in perspective. And if we connect this back to the walking on water miracle and the disciples' lack of understanding, you see it's a consistent theme. True faith, true purity. It's about the condition of our hearts, not just outward actions.
This is really making me rethink the whole story.
Yeah.
I always focused on the spectacle of Jesus walking on water, but now I'm seeing this deeper layer about the disciples' inner struggles, the Pharisees' legalism, and Jesus' call for a more authentic faith.
It's amazing how these seemingly disparate elements weave together to create such a rich tapestry of meaning.
Okay, before we move on, I have one more question about the hand-washing issue. Dr. Jennings points out that Mark adds a little comment after Jesus' teaching about what makes a person unclean. Mark says that Jesus declared all foods clean. Why is that important?
Ah, that's a great catch. This is likely a reflection of early church teaching, specifically from Peter and Paul, who were spreading the gospel to the Gentiles. Remember, early Christians debated whether Gentile converts needed to follow Jewish dietary laws. Mark, who is believed to have been a companion of both Peter and Paul, is connecting Jesus' teachings to those later developments in the early church.
So it's almost like Mark is interpreting Jesus' words through the lens of his own context, highlighting how these teachings continue to be relevant even after Jesus was gone. But why is this little comment tucked away in the middle of this confrontation with the Pharisees?
It's subtle, but I think it reinforces the theme we've been talking about. The Pharisees are hung up on these external rules, but Jesus is focused on a deeper transformation. And Mark, by adding that comment about food, is suggesting that this transformation extends to all aspects of life, even, the seemingly mundane details like what we eat.
That makes sense. So we've gone from walking on water to hand washing to ancient financial loopholes to early church controversies. It's amazing how Dr. Jennings weaves all these threads together.
It's like we're peeling back the layers of an onion, revealing more and more complexity with each new insight.
And what I find particularly thought-provoking is this contrast between the disciples' amazement at the miracles and their hardened hearts. They witness the extraordinary, yet they still struggle to grasp the deeper meaning. It makes you wonder if we would have done any better.
That's the question that lingers, isn't it? It challenges us to examine our own hearts and our own understanding of faith. Are we truly open to the deeper meaning behind the teachings? Or are we stuck at the surface level of amazement? Just like the disciples in the boat. That's something we'll explore further in part three.
It's almost like we're looking in a mirror, isn't it? Seeing ourselves in those disciples, struggling to understand, clinging to the familiar, even when presented with something truly transformative.
Yeah, it's a humbling thought. And I think that's precisely Dr. Jennings' point. This story, it isn't just about Jesus walking on water. It's a reflection of our own journey of faith. Mm-hmm. We all encounter moments that challenge our assumptions, that push us beyond our comfort zones. The question is, how do we respond?
Do we cling to what we think we know, like those disciples? Or do we allow ourselves to be truly open, to embrace the unknown, even if it's scary?
Right. And that's what makes this deep dive so relevant, even, you know, thousands of years after these events took place. This struggle between outward rituals and true faith, it's something we all face, even today. I mean, we might not be debating hand washing or, you know, Corbin rules, but we all have our own versions of those things, don't we?
Our own ways of clinging to tradition, to what's comfortable, maybe even missing the point in the process. But how do we break free from that? How do we cultivate that deeper understanding that Jesus seems to be calling for?
Well, I don't think there's an easy answer. You know, it's a lifelong journey of self-reflection, of questioning, of seeking. Dr. Jennings, he doesn't offer a simple solution, but he does leave us with a powerful challenge.
To look inward, to examine our own hearts.
Yeah.
And ask ourselves, if we were in that boat with the disciples, would we have recognized Jesus for who he truly was?
Or would we have been blinded by our own fears and preconceptions just like them? It's a question that, you know, stays with you long after the lecture is over.
It's a question worth wrestling with, that's for sure. You know, it's easy to get caught up in the spectacle, the miracles, the drama. But what Dr. Jennings highlights here is the need for genuine transformation, a change of heart that goes beyond outward appearances.
Yeah. And I think that's the takeaway message we can carry with us from this deep dive. It's not about simply going through the motions. It's about seeking that deeper connection, that openness to the divine that allows us to truly see, to truly understand.
Wow. That's a powerful image to end on. It really makes you stop and think. Thanks so much for guiding us through this deep dive. I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on this, you know, familiar story.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And as always, the journey of discovery continues. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deeper. You never know what treasures you might uncover.
Absolutely. And to all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time for another fascinating exploration.